With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm Tiki Barber, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Brandon Tierney's off for today, so it's just me. You can get in touch with us in many ways on Twitter, at Tiki and Tierney. You can hit us up on the phone as well, 855-212-4227. That's 4CBS. You can hit us up on all kinds of social media to chat about anything around the games last night. And they were interesting. We have a good show, too. Zach Davies, who's a Milwaukee Brewers pitcher, will join us in our 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific hour. He'll talk about the Brewers and how good he's been playing. He's undefeated so far, 5-0. And I think six or seven starts that he's had. And Zach Harper, who is with The Athletic, will join us in our 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific hour to talk some basketball and what we saw in Game 1. And we'll get to Game 1 because it was obviously compelling. And I think BT, if he had a do-over from his drop at the beginning of the show, would not be uninterested in this NBA Finals. Obviously, he said that because looking at how the Milwaukee Bucks and the Toronto Raptors were playing each other, he didn't think that either one of them would have had a chance against the Golden State Warriors with or without Kevin Durant. Well, that's obviously proven to be false. As we saw in Game 1, a big win for the Raptors up north, and they did it in not fully convincing fashion, but it was pretty convincing fashion. I think the Raptors did a great job of deferring away from their superstar. Kawhi Leonard's the guy. He's the catalyst. He gets everything done for them. But it was all of the pieces around him that got it done. And it was interesting watching Kawhi, because unlike a lot of the other superstars in the NBA, it doesn't have to be about him. Yeah, the Warriors will talk about how their plan to disrupt Kawhi worked. He only scored 23 points, but it was almost as if Kawhi knew that their plan was to disrupt him, and he wasn't pounding the rock into the hard court over and over and over again, just trying to create bad shots for himself. He was a willing distributor. They didn't have a ton of assists, but he was constantly trying to find his other teammates, and that's why we saw Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and Marc Gasol. We saw those guys scoring more points than they usually do. It's a testament to the kind of superstar he is. And it's interesting when you look at this Warriors team, they talked about the unfamiliarity that they have with this Raptors squad. They only played twice in the regular season. Steph and Draymond didn't play in one of those games, and I don't think Kawhi played in the other one. And so you can overreact, and I think a lot of people are and are probably overreacting to this Game 1 loss on the road, by the way, for the Golden State Warriors. But I'm not overly concerned. They have a really good coach in Steve Kerr, and they have superstar championship players with the veteran experience and been through adversity. So I'm not worried about the Golden State Warriors because they lost Game 1. I would be worried if Kevin Durant doesn't come back, and we'll get to that in our next segment. But there's something that struck me as I was watching this game and started to dig around Pascal Siakam and even Fred VanVleet, who obviously feels like he came out of nowhere, Siakam, that is. We know the story. He was found in Cameroon. Luke Bamute had a camp, and someone noticed him, and then he makes his way to New Mexico State. He's only there for 2 years. He gets drafted in the 27th round in 2016, and just kind of is a guy. And Draymond even talked about this. He's becoming a guy, not just a guy. There's multiple meanings of the same phrase, which I found very interesting. But Pascal Siakam, he's compelling because he is the example of how the Toronto Raptors did use the exact same model that the Golden State Warriors to build a championship quality team. Now, we back up 6-7 years ago. You look at the Golden State Warriors, and they drafted Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Draymond Green, and there's not a lot of potential superstardom in those guys, but they developed, and we laud them, right? We laud the front office. We laud their process to building a championship team. They bring in Steve Kerr, and they win their first championship. And this was without Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry was just becoming the superstar. But the development of the team, of the player, was what was so interesting and so compelling and made them fun, made them likable, because it wasn't like they were just recruiting superstars and trying to win that way, get the most, the best players that we can pay for, even if we have to go over the luxury tax and try to win that way. That's not what they did. They did it an old school way. They developed and they won a championship. They lost a second one, and then they bring in Kevin Durant, the big time free agent from Oklahoma City. They win two more, and we know their story, where they've been in five consecutive NBA Finals, which is a modern record. Obviously, the Boston Celtics back in the 60s have the overall record. They went to 10 in a row. But when I think about the Toronto Raptors, I kind of see the same thing. Now, yeah, I know they brought in some players. They brought in Kawhi, and they brought in Marc Gasol at the trade deadline, which was a great move by Masai Ujiri. But Pascal Siakam was a 27th pick in 2016. He spent the majority of the second half of his rookie season. Jared Sellinger was hurt early, so he played a lot as early as a rookie. But he spent the majority of the second half in the G League. Here's a guy who scores 32 points in the NBA Finals, Game 1, his first experience, the Toronto Raptors' first experience. He scores 32 points, and 2 years ago he was in the G League because he was getting developed. The same thing happened with Fred VanVleet, who we all know from Wichita State. He was amazing in college, but he wasn't even drafted, and he spent the majority of his 2016, same season, his 2016-17 season, back and forth in the G League. I think he was assigned and reassigned 16 times. Pascal Siakam was assigned 13 times. But there was a plan in place, and maybe we didn't see it, and maybe we got distracted by the process that they were going through, because every single season from 2015, 16, and 17 in the Eastern Conference Finals, and 15, and then and 16 and 17 the Eastern Conference Semis, they kept running up against a brick wall in LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And so we wrote off the Toronto Raptors. We said they can't get it done. But it doesn't mean that the success wasn't brewing behind the scenes. Obviously, we know what happened this past offseason with the trade that Masai Ujiri made for Kawhi Leonard. He replaced one superstar with a better superstar, and DeMar DeRozan sent them down to the San Antonio Spurs and got Kawhi Leonard. And here we find them. And as you really look at this, it says to you, there's a process to getting to an NBA final and actually finding a way to win. It's not by acquiring all the superstars that you can, which was the model that the Oklahoma City Thunder tried to do, by the way. We remember them about 6 or 7 years ago when they draft KD and they draft Russ and they draft James Harden, but they couldn't get it done. They couldn't work well together. And it's interesting as I think about this offseason, and we think about where the five Ks are going to go, KD and Kawhi and Kyrie and Klay and Kemba Walker. Anthony Davis is in this conversation as well. Jimmy Butler falls in there, even though he's a little bit lesser of a superstar than those ones that we're talking about, the Ks that we're talking about. As these guys start to think about this, as they get approached by the Celtics or the Nets or the Lakers or the Clippers or the Knicks, I wonder how many of them are thinking about the process that these teams are going through to build something first before they acquire the superstar. And as you look at this, the Celtics probably have the best situation for any one of these free agents, these superstar free agents, because of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier. And I think you can even throw in Marcus Smart into that conversation as well, because they have developed the young talent that'll be available for the superstar. And they kind of thought that was the case with Kyrie, but Kyrie was a little bit too enigmatic, so it didn't really work out. I don't want to say he was a bad teammate, but he was a quirky teammate. I find this success of the Raptors, which demonstrated itself in Game 1 of the NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors, who are the back-to-back champions looking for a three-peat, and everybody's mind, they had already been pushed into their third consecutive one. And look, that may still happen. I'm not, and again, as I said 10 minutes ago, I'm not worried about the Golden State Warriors. This is going to be a hell of a series, and because the Raptors have home court advantage, and the Scotiabank Arena is unbelievable. I think the emotion in it is something that caught the Golden State Warriors by surprise, especially early in this game. I'm not worried about them, but when I see the Raptors, it makes me think about how these superstars should be looking at the teams they may be going to next year. And I don't want to bury the lead. It's obviously about the Toronto Raptors, but the thing that jumped out to me is the process that the Raptors went through, which is almost a mirror, not exactly a mirror, but very similar to what the Golden State Warriors went through. So the Knicks, whether it's Knox or Mitchell or whoever it is, as they think about acquiring these superstars, they better have developed some non-superstars first. Otherwise, I think this Kawhi lesson that demonstrated itself in Game 1, or showed itself to the world, really, in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, is going to be very informative to these players. It's cool to go be the man somewhere, right? I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to be the man. But you're not going to win, because I don't care how good of a star you are. I know it's a strength-led NBA, so you got to have the star in order to win. But the star by himself doesn't always win. And I think Kawhi Leonard even proved that in Game 1. 23 points. He was inefficient. The Warriors had a great plan to slow him down. It was those other guys who were developed in the past couple of years who lifted this team past a team that a lot of people thought that they couldn't beat. That was my takeaway from this Game 1. It's going to be a fantastic series, and we'll talk about what it's going to take for the Golden State Warriors to get this thing right, especially with Boogie. DeMarcus Cousins hobbled a little bit. He was gassed, but you couldn't expect anything less than that. But he was out there. Can KD come back? But when you think about this Raptors team, this isn't an accident. They didn't just play great because the Warriors played terrible. Masai Ujiri had a plan. He executed it to perfection. Pascal Siakam was just the tip of the iceberg, I think, on what his career and what his development for this Raptors team is going to look forward to in the future. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Give us a call here at Tiki and Tierney. Let us know what you think about the Raptors and the Warriors. And then more importantly, we'll get to this on the other side of this break. Can the Raptors keep this up? And how necessary is Kevin Durant to this Warriors team if they want to find a way to win? Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki Barber here on CBS Sports Radio, talking about the Raptors and the Warriors. And I'm not concerned about the Warriors. If they go down 2-0, or I guess 0-2, I should say, and have to go back home and really guard against going down 0-3 without Kevin Durant, then I'll get a little bit worried. But right now, you got to give a lot of credit to the Toronto Raptors squad and how they have grown over the year. Let's not forget, earlier in the year, as good as they are defensively now, they weren't that good of a defensive team. It was the addition of Marc Gasol who became a difference maker, because we didn't think he could guard around the perimeter, but he actually is doing it quite well. And obviously Kawhi is a long defender, defensive player of the year. Pascal Siakam, he switches like anybody else. He's got a high energy motor, so he can run around and defend a lot of great players in the NBA, as we saw last night against the Golden State Warriors. Steve Kerr, though, talked about what really was the issue with this Golden State Warriors team. They don't usually do what they did last night, which was turn the ball over. 16 turnovers they had, which led to a lot of things, a lot of easy buckets for the Toronto Raptors. Here's Steve Kerr on the game last
Biggest thing for me was our transition defense was just awful. And that's the game. That's the number one priority when you play Toronto. You have to take care of their transition. And we gave up 24 fast break points. We turned it over 17 times. So that's the game, really. The other stuff, you know, guys are going to make shots, miss shots. They're going to have good games. They're going to have bad games. But it's kind of the key points that you can take care of that that are the most important, and we didn't take care of that.
Yeah, and look, I buy that. That's Steve Kerr talking after the game last night. The turnovers were a big part of this. They had their usual number of assists, almost 30. I think they had 29 assists on 34 makes. They shot pretty well. I mean, you look at the stats, not like they just had a horrendous night. Just the Toronto Raptors played better. Now, are they going to continually do that? Who knows? I mean, is Pascal Siakam going to, you know, shoot 14 of 17 and score 32 points? A lot of those were on transition buckets, by the way. So that, I mean, that plays into what we can possibly see as a defensive correction for the Steve Kerr defense. But again, I'm not worried about this team, about this Warriors team. I think this series is going to be fantastic. Let's hear what you all have to say. Let's get Rick, who's listening online. Welcome to CBS Sports Radio. How you doing, Rick?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm well, man. What do you think here?
Good. Yeah, to me, I think major factor, KD definitely changes everything. I think Kawhi doesn't have to exert himself as much, even though he struggled, that they actually did pretty well on him. He shoot the ball, but still he's doing everything defensively. And then it opens the lane for guys like Siakam and Gasol and even a guy like Danny Green. So I just think it leaves the Warriors where, you know, they're slumping and the team goes on the run. They can go to KD to get him a couple stretches of buckets, and they're too Curry and Thompson reliant to create for guys like Iggy and Draymond, who can't really do it on their own.
Yeah.
So you see how much of a huge hole it creates for him, and that's why without him, I think that the Raptors are going to win the series, because at home, especially having home court was another major factor for them. So I think they can be able to defend home court. Chances of them winning in Golden State are slim to none. Not that they couldn't.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening, but I just feel like with their size, length, and depth, and that defense, they're not going to be like Portland or Houston where they're going to blow leads late in games. They know how to close teams out. So I think it's going to be a major, major factor as to when KD comes, because without him, I think the Raptors easily are going to take this series. I just see they don't have enough without him out there, as great as they are.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, because you talk about – and thank you, Rick. Appreciate the call. When you talk about KD, like KD is one of these players – he hits from everywhere, right? And he can, whether he's in the paint, whether he's shooting from range, or whether he's sitting in the mid-range, which a lot of players aren't willing to do because it's a tough shot, right? It's where defenses collapse, right? They collapse into that mid-range, and it's why it's such an inefficient shot. And you see teams like the Houston Rockets only taking three-pointers or trying to score at the rim. But KD, because he's so tall, a seven-footer, he has his spots in the mid-range. And so when the Golden State Warriors, like we saw in the first quarter here, start to struggle, I think they shot like 32% or 33% in the first quarter, you need a guy like Kevin Durant who can manufacture a bucket no matter where he is. That's where this Warriors team gets in trouble, because they can't manufacture buckets without Kevin Durant on a regular basis. Steph Curry actually talked about not having KD.
KD is an all-time great player on both ends of the floor, so I could sit here and talk for days about what he adds to our roster. You know, we've obviously proven that when he's out, we can have guys step up, and you know that's going to be the case until he gets back.
Yeah, is he necessary? I don't think he's necessary for this team to win, for the Warriors to beat the Raptors, but I think it's a whole hell of a lot easier. And the nonsense that we heard from the last six games, the previous six games that the Golden State Warriors played without Kevin Durant, that they didn't really need him to win a championship, is proven false. Not because, you know, because of his impact, but more when you think about who they were playing. The Houston Rockets were flawed. Obviously, so were the Portland Trailblazers. So without Kevin Durant, you can still be quite effective. Let's get to William, who's out in Las Vegas. William, welcome to CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how you guys doing? I guess which is more of a question than anything, because you brought up the process, and a lot of shows don't bring that up. Here's my question. The collective bargaining agreement that took place earlier this decade?
Yeah, 2012?
Yeah,
I think it was 2012, right?
Yes. How much of it, what we're seeing today, is a process versus the restrictions that collective bargaining put on a lot of the big names that stayed with teams that they probably wouldn't have stayed with
or
affected situations that wouldn't have been moved around?
You know, it's interesting, William, because it's a great point, because think about before 2012, basketball players made good money. I mean, it was all guaranteed, so they were making, you know, $50, $60, $70 million, right? So it was good money. But after the 2012 CBA and the influx of cash, the popularity of the league, these guys were making so much cash that you didn't need to stay at home to get the incentive to play more, you know, to get paid more. And that's what you're referring to, I believe, William. I appreciate your call, William. There used to be an incentive for homegrown stars to stay because the home team could pay them significantly more. But because even if you leave and you're paid less than the home team can pay you, you're still going to make $190 million, which is the max contract for a guy that leaves. Obviously, for guys who are making super maxes or they take the max at home, it's probably $30 million more. But, I mean, $30 million on $200 million, what's the difference, right? And so I think you make a very good point. But my point, and really what I was getting at, talking about the process that the Raptors went through, which in my mind mirrors exactly what the Golden State Warriors did, they developed some young players. And I don't know if we saw it with Masai Ujiri, what he was trying to do. When you read about the process of how they got the Pascal Siakam, it was odd, right? They talked about it in the draft room, like, is this really our guy? I mean, why isn't he on anybody else's draft? Well, why aren't people talking about him as a top 15 or 20 player? We know he's going to be there at 27, but why is he going to be there at 27? We think he's really good. He was 20-11 at New Mexico State in his last year there and was a long, athletic, energetic player, a Draymond type athlete, a type player, like disruptor. How come he wasn't taken so high? But they were committed to their plan, and they drafted him. He had to play right away, as I mentioned before, because Jared Sollinger was banged up. So he got some good minutes early, and then he developed in the G League, right? We don't pay attention to the G League. And maybe we should, especially now that there are these two-way contracts that allow the NBA to send guys down and back and down and back and down and back, so they experience what it's like to be in the show, but they actually get a chance to play a lot more minutes and develop in the G League. They did it with Fred VanVleet. They did it with Pascal Siakam. When you look at the two X factors, I'll put that in quotes, the X factors for this Toronto Raptors squad over the last, you know, two or three series, who has it been? I mean, it's obviously Kawhi, but who has it been? It's been Siakam and his defensive versatility. It's been Fred VanVleet, who was hitting about 80% of his three-pointers after his baby was born. So those things you got to give credit for. If we're going to give the Warriors credit for developing and building their team that way and then adding a superstar in Kevin Durant who pushed them over the top and made them this dynastic-type team, we got to give the Toronto Raptors credit. I think it's interesting because if I'm Kawhi Leonard, right, and we've just won game one, we saw what the North, the Jurassic Park, as they like to call it, provided from an energy standpoint, a fandom standpoint, even though I can't figure out why no Raptors fans have bought Kawhi Leonard jerseys yet. All of them that call haven't bought any. I don't care if he's only there for a year. You're in the NBA Finals. Buy a Kawhi Leonard jersey. But anyway, my point is, if I'm Kawhi Leonard, I'm looking at what's happening right at home. Yeah, maybe the Clippers are interesting. They got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Who's the other guy? Landry Shamet. They have. There's some talent there. But have they developed those B-ish players the same way that Toronto Raptors did? Because that's why he's here. If he wants to keep winning championships, that's an important thing to look at. Some big changes are happening in the NFL. No, not the NFL. Big changes may happen in the NFL with the strike, but there's a lot of changes happening in college football as it pertains to alcohol. Is this good or bad? We'll get to it in bounds and out of bounds. But first, let's get an update from Richard Ackerman. It's time to Ask the Pros, where you, the listener, get to ask me a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later on in the show when I will answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. Tiki Barber here on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to do inbounds and out of bounds here in a second. In our next hour, Zach Davies, who's a Milwaukee Brewers starting pitcher, who's 5-0 on the season and 11 starts. He'll join us, talk about their hot start. They're half a game behind the Cubs in the Central right now. Things are looking great. They have a ton of talent on that team. Obviously, Christian Yelich, 21 home runs, I believe, on the season. Ryan Braun is also playing well, as is Lorenzo Cain. So the Brewers are actually looking really good. And we'll get back to NBA talk with Zach Harper in our third hour. Before we do that, let's get to inbounds and out of bounds. Sam, are you going to help me?
Anything can happen in sports, and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki. Number one, for years, the NFL has prohibited active players from appearing in alcohol ads, forcing companies to use retired players and coaches. I'm sure this affected you deeply during your playing days.
Or those that were retiring. I'll get to the Peyton Manning awesomeness in a second.
I love Peyton. However, next season, the league will be easing their restrictions a little bit and allow players to appear in beer ads alone with a few restrictions. One, the player must be in fully licensed uniform, which is interesting.
That's odd.
Yes. More odd is the fact that the player cannot actually endorse the beer.
So he's going to be holding a beer but not say, drink this beer?
Or maybe he'll just be like throwing a football and then someone else will be talking about a beer. They also can't make it seem like the beer enhances his play. And finally, the beer companies who want to use more than one player can't use two, can't use three, can't use four. They have to use a minimum of six. So it's either one or more than six.
Oh, interesting.
Which is very interesting. Yeah. So inbounds, out of bounds.
That makes sense. Get a quarterback and all his offensive linemen. That'll work. I think that's probably a PA thing, but go ahead.
The NFL should remove all restrictions for current players for alcohol ads.
I'm going to say out of bounds on this, even though I'll take you back to 2015. The 2015 season and the 2016 Super Bowl when Peyton Manning won in his last game and walked away. And you guys probably remember this because I remember it. It was hilarious listening to it because I knew about the restriction on alcohol, especially beer ads in the NFL. And Peyton, hey, Peyton, what's going to happen? You're going to retire? What are you going to do? Yeah, I don't know, but I'm going to, you know, go get some Buds and Bud Lights and, you know, really tart toasting. What we didn't know at the time, but we subsequently found out, was that Peyton Manning had invested in Budweiser distributorship. Maybe probably in Colorado, but who knows where it was. But he was a Budweiser distributor. He was using the media to promote a beer product. And it probably rubbed a few of the NFL front office folks the wrong way. But I'm going to say out of bounds here. I think athletes are portrayed to have these temples of bodies and to start using them to sell alcohol to young, impressionable kids. Kids are going to do these things anyways, but to have it reinforced by some of their NFL stars, I think is a little bit out of bounds. I'm really interested, though, given these restrictions that Samter was running through. You have to be in a fully licensed uniform. Does that mean that, like, I don't know, Eli Manning's got to be in a Giants uniform to sell this, whatever, be in this beer ad. It's interesting. This is going to be really interesting how it's executed. But I'm going to say out of bounds. They shouldn't remove all the restrictions.
Are you in or are you out?
Hater. Hater. Anyway, as we discussed last week.
IPAs, it'd be a different story.
Yeah, there you go. As we discussed last week, Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni, his contract expires after the season and the team has been discussing an extension.
Mm-hmm.
However, new reports say that D'Antoni has cut off contract talks and the team will actually look to give him a potential extension after the season, not before. Last week, we spoke to Rockets owner Tim Fertitta about D'Antoni's situation.
We're in talk with Mike right now, and we want Mike back. I don't know how long the extension will be. I don't really know what he wants. Not that he wouldn't want to coach three more years.
I don't
think Mike said it. Two years ago, was saying, I'm going to be done at the end of this contract. But I also know that Mike's having fun. We're just trying to get over the hump. But at some point, something's got to change here. Like I said, Mike will be back, and I think Mike's going to be back definitely for more than 1 year.
Inbounds or out of bounds, the Rockets should not give D'Antoni an extension next year if they do not reach the NBA Finals.
I'm going to say inbounds. I think that they have taken a lot of steps, and Tillman Fertitta has spent a lot of money crafting this Rockets team and building it up, you know, signing, hanging on to Clint Capella, whose game is limited, but he is a rim protector. He doesn't score as freely or easily as he needs to for this Rockets team to really take a step forward. Because, I mean, if you need to just be able to dump it down and he have a post game, which he doesn't. It's all alley-oops. James Harden, not that he's getting old, but maybe his style is getting old in the postseason against better teams, and teams have figured it out. Clearly the Warriors have. And Chris Paul is at the point where they're looking to move him and trade him. So if they can't get it done as their roster is currently constructed, you know if they don't make to the finals next year that they're going to have to break it up. And the last thing you want to do as an owner is pay a guy who's 68 years old. I mean, how long is he going to do this, Mike D'Antoni? I like Mike D'Antoni. He actually comes across as significantly younger than 68 years old, but he's 68 years old, and he hasn't ever gotten there. If he gets there, reward him. Give him a 3-year extension. Let him leave whenever he wants to or whatever it may be. But I'm going to say inbounds right now. They should not give him the extension if they don't reach the finals. It's been a lot of years of them positioning and preparing to get where they are. They keep falling short, though.
Are you in or are you out?
Major League Baseball attendance has been a major talking point for the past few years, as average attendance around the league has dropped below 30,000 a game for the first time since 2003. Yesterday, a new report shows attendance this year has dropped even further, the fourth year in a row, down 1.4% from this time last year. Case in point, the Reds, the Orioles, the Twins, and the Rays have set stadium lows this year. On Wednesday, the Marlins and the Rays drew just over 12,000 fans combined between the two teams. And the Marlins are actually averaging fewer fans a game than the AAA Las Vegas affiliate. Major League Baseball should shorten the season to make each game more important.
I'm going to say out of bounds only because of how it's worded. I don't think shortening the season is going to make games more important. I don't think that's the issue. I think Major League Baseball needs to find a way to force teams to be competitive and spend money. Some of these teams, and look, the Rays are an interesting outlier in this conversation because the Rays, I believe, have the second lowest payroll in baseball. The Marlins have the lowest one, but the Rays have the second lowest payroll in baseball, and right now they're only half a game behind the Yankees for first place in the AL East. And last year they won 90 games. They're doing it with two starters right now.
And still nobody's going.
Exactly. They had 5,700 people at a game. Now, we've talked about this yesterday, and we've talked about it many times on this show. Part of it is because of the location of their stadium. It's just hard to get to St. Pete, the peninsula down there. If they moved it in town, I think it would be different. But I think the bigger issue is that the competitiveness or lack thereof of some of these teams, like the Reds, even though they're kind of interesting and they're not that good. The Orioles are clearly racing to the bottom, and the Marlins are another one that we talk about. There's no competitiveness there. So why would you go if the team's not trying to win? And you're not really invested in the players or the organization, why would you go? So I think it's more about making it more competitive, which is would, I think, involve instituting a floor, salary floor. We know that there's a cap that you get taxed on, but put a floor. So I'm going to say out of bounds here.
Are you in or are you out?
There are approximately 129 college football programs in the country.
More beer.
And for many years, alcohol sales were not permitted in college stadiums. However, the number of schools selling alcohol at games has nearly tripled over the past decade, with over 50 schools currently allowing alcohol sales, including some Power 5 teams in the Big Ten, Big 12, and ACC. The SEC, which prohibited all teams to sell alcohol, today lifted that ban and will allow each school to make its own decision on whether or not to sell alcohol. One of those programs, Georgia, has already announced that they will allow top donors who give $25,000 or more to the school will be able to purchase alcohol in premium seating areas. That's a $25,000 beer, sir.
Yes, right? You better have 25,000 of them over the course of a season. Seriously.
Sir, I mean, a dollar beer, that works out. All right.
Even though you still got to pay for the beer. You never catch it up.
Six home games or whatever it might be.
You never catch it up because you got to pay for the beer anyway. So it's you're screwed. No matter
it might cut down on tailgating, but that breached this question. It is a bad idea for colleges to sell alcohol at games.
No. I'm going to say out of bounds here. It's not a bad idea. You've been to tailgates. You went to Arizona State, or at least you worked at Arizona State, so you know what it's like. Interestingly, we'll have Zach Davies, who committed to Arizona State, coming up on the other side of this break at the top of the hour. He did not play for Arizona State, however. I'm going to ask him why he decided to go into minors. Turned out well for him, but he's going to ask him that question anyways. We've been to parking lots. There's alcohol all around in college sports. And so I'm going to say out of bounds. It's not a bad idea. It actually will increase revenue for some of these stadiums. Not that SEC squads need the extra money because they're so it's such a compelling league and the games are always entertaining. But some of the other smaller schools, I think this is a good thing for them from a revenue standpoint. And like I said, alcohol's there already. I mean, how many people went to games with a flask strapped to their legs over the last decade plus? So I'm going to say, yeah, this is out of bounds. It's not a bad idea to sell alcohol at games.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
And Tampa just made a good point. You're absolutely right. Like, one of the issues, and you see this with, like, I hate to bring it up, but it's a reality. We all know this. Underage drinking on college campuses happens. And the way that some people, young kids, men and women, get away with this is that they'll binge drink before they leave their house, right? Before they go out and they have water, but they're already hammered by the time they get there. I think if you open up beer sales or alcohol sales. I don't know if this is just beer. Is it beer and alcohol, Sam? There's probably both, right?
I believe it's all alcohol.
Yeah, all alcohol. So beer and alcohol. You'd likely see less binge drinking in the parking lots before games, which cause a ton of issues, as we all know, whether it's people passing out and getting sick or getting in fights. So I think it's a good idea, and it's about time. Because there's nothing worse than going to watch a game and not being able to have a beer. Because that's what happened to me at the Mets game when it was 90 degrees last Sunday. The beer guy took forever to come over. And all I wanted was a beer. Me and my father-in-law ended up getting Budweiser's when it finally came around. Zach Davies, Milwaukee Brewers pitcher, will join us next. They have such an interesting squad and a start to their season. 32 and 25 they are in the season. They're half a game behind the Chicago Cubs. The Central, the NL, is interesting. It's very tight. Obviously, the Dodgers are the team that everybody is chasing in the National League. But the Central is one of the more competitive races. We'll talk to Zach Davies, one of their starting pitchers. As I mentioned, 11 starts. He's 5-0 so far. He's having a fantastic season. We'll talk to him coming up later on. We'll have football at the 40s, and Zach Harper of The Athletic will join us. Also, SiriusXM NBA Radio to get back to the NBA Finals. We already saw game one, Raptors up 1-0. Game two is on Sunday. We'll see what he thinks the plan should be for Kevin Durant going forward. Zach Davies of the Milwaukee Brewers coming up on the other side. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.